Lake Effect continues now on WUWM. I'm Joy Powers. The 2020 census will have a big impact on this country. Among other things, it'll decide how much federal money goes to each state and the number of congressional seats that they get. And although there has been a lot of controversy over how accurate this census will be, few have scrutinized the way each state counts its prisoners. Counting prisoners in districts where they serve versus districts where they lived originally can shift political power away from Black urban communities to rural white communities. Natasha Haverty is an independent journalist in Milwaukee who has been reporting on this issue known as prison gerrymandering. Her work was featured as a recent episode of Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting. Haverty joins Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski in the studio and begins by explaining prison gerrymandering.
The idea is when the census comes around in a couple months, they're going to count all of us and sort of take stock of who we are as a country. Now, when the census counts people who are incarcerated, what they do is they count those folks who are behind bars as residents of the place that they're incarcerated, not where that inmate might call home. And that's where the phrase prison gerrymandering comes in, because then it's that data that gets used for drawing political districts and other things that come out of the census.
Right. And it's a bit complicated because people, you know, their minds go to, well, prisoners can't even vote.
Yeah, and I'm glad you point that out, because that's true in all but two states in the country, right? And so you're talking about moving blocks of non-voters around for the purpose of drawing districts, which makes it kind of an unusual aspect of drawing political districts.
Right, and a lot of these prisoners get transferred 100-plus miles away and increase a small Wisconsin town's population. So what prison did you specifically look into here in Wisconsin?
You know, I tried to take a look all around the state. We eventually got data from the Department of Corrections that let us look at where people who were incarcerated were getting sent. So we actually got to take a pretty holistic look at it. One gentleman who's in the story is at Oak Hill Correctional right now. Everybody who's in the system has some relationship to Waupun. As we know, that's a main facility. I was also up in Juneau County because that facility was pretty new. So the folks there that were drawing the political districts had to reconcile with what it meant to have a new prison when they were doing their last round of redistricting.
Right. And the man you spoke with, he had a connection to another person you had in your story, which was Cheryl Collins. She lives here in Milwaukee in the 53206 area. So you also draw that connection. So here in Milwaukee, we all recognize that we are one of the most heavily segregated cities and that the most Black men are sent to prison in the 53206 neighborhood. What did you feel was important to lay out for audiences who are not familiar with Milwaukee and Wisconsin?
Yeah, it was true to look at it from a national perspective because this was for a national audience and not take certain things for granted. It felt important to show, you know, these are dynamics that are pretty familiar across the country, the idea that people get sent away to parts of the state that are often really different from. So if we see a real overrepresentation of people of color who are from the cities getting sent to areas that are overwhelmingly white, often rural. That's not to say that other people don't get sent to prison, but again, there's a disproportionate amount. So those dynamics are familiar anywhere. I think as a reporter, it's always, you know, you get this limited amount of time to tell a story that could take years. For example, how did the 53206 get to be at this place where incarceration is such a big part of life there? And you don't want to, it's almost an act of violence as a journalist to just sort of like answer it in two sentences and move on. And that actually was part of the writing that we went back and forth a lot on is, okay, what's the version of this that Cheryl and her brother are going to not, you know, sort of have their stomachs churned at, which I think happens a lot when journalists talk about neighborhoods like the 53206. Also, not being from here. I mean, I live here now, but there's that risk of being like a flyover helicopter reporter who comes in, gets just the sort of quotes you need, and then leaves forever. There was a luxury and an honor in getting to spend a lot of time with Cheryl, for example, and have her be this guide, this sort of helper figure, and for her to be the one that's kind of grappling with prison gerrymandering.
Right. And what did you learn from Cheryl and from spending your time here in Milwaukee? Did you move here at this point when you were doing the story, or were you?
I was living here the whole time that I was with Cheryl, which was nice because we could say, I mean, I still wish that I had more time with Cheryl, but we could say, okay, we'll get to that next time. You know,
sure.
Like, this is exhausting. It was neat to come upon Cheryl because it felt really important to not, again, an issue like this can be a little wonky. And there's a risk as a reporter in teaching whoever you're interviewing about it and then saying, so what do you think? You know, what's your reaction? What's cool about Cheryl is she was very aware of how her neighbors and her family members were being counted as residents of the district they were incarcerated and was aware of the bigger questions of, okay, what does that mean for how voices like hers show up when it comes to policy decisions and who's representing her community? So she was really on the ground pointing at ways that her voice was getting diluted.
And her brother was also very much aware. Do you know whether he would also share this knowledge with other prisoners? Because he's featured in the story, calling you from prison, and he knows it's limiting their political power. But I would imagine people don't know about this. The big census issue this past year or so has been, you know, are you a resident of the country? That has been the big issue on the forefront of people's minds, but not necessarily the gerrymandering issue.
Yeah, it was cool to find, not just find him, but that he was Cheryl's brother and that he on his own, you know, he's been incarcerated most of his life. So he and Cheryl have very little chance to communicate. So separately, these two were aware of this issue. And yeah, he and fellow inmates were aware of it. I think a lot of your time in prison is spent surviving, and so there's a spectrum of interest in, you know, what's your role in democracy. Leonard happens to be someone that, again, was really keenly aware of what it meant for his body to be counted in that way, because it extends to this bigger question of how are folks who are incarcerated or how are people whose lives are shaped by these huge policy decisions we've made about locking up so many people, how is that ever going to change when you're silencing, you know, through what you mentioned at the beginning, people not having the right to vote, the sort of the biggest stakeholders in this question.
Right, or being on paper and they
right.
can't vote when they're out of prison.
Right, and whatever we feel about that, whatever we think in terms of is that the fair punishment, but then how does that extend into the possibility of any policy being changed when there's no one really going to represent your interests?
Right. And you do feature some voices of some representatives in these rural counties that have these prisons with the expected bump in population in the census count. And I'm curious about which states have counted prisoners as residents in regards to the gerrymandering that we're talking about here in Wisconsin, and which states are closing the divide? What states are changing those policies, and where does Wisconsin stand in that category?
Most recently, New Jersey just passed a law to count people who are incarcerated at home. All of the states that have made the change have been since the last census, and they all happen to be run, I believe, the majority in their state houses are Democrats. And it sort of remains to be seen what the effects, for example, in a state like New York, where you had pretty draconian policies in terms of drug offenses called the Rockefeller drug laws. So if those policies were getting perpetuated by an overrepresentation of the rural prison districts, what's going to happen now that all of those people who are incarcerated now are getting counted as residents downstate? Where Wisconsin falls, there is a bill that is still, I think, going through the state house right now that was introduced by some Democrats. But again, it doesn't really stand a chance, as I've been told by plenty of members in the state house. Wisconsin has considered making changes, but what's kind of weird about Wisconsin is some people in government will tell you it's actually state law here to count people who are in prison as residents of their home district. Now, that's arguable, but what we do know is the attorney general in 1981, Bob La Follette, he wrote an opinion that said basically, yeah, to when we draw districts, we have to use unaltered census data. So that's really the only thing that any redistricting boards have to go on now. So when they're saying, what the heck are we supposed to do with these huge prison populations in our county, they've got La Follette's opinion and not much else. So unless the attorney general this time around says, hey, this doesn't follow our constitution, one person, one vote, it's hard to see Wisconsin changing.
Do you think it would be a matter of not only a state Supreme Court, but perhaps be taken on nationally at some point?
Well, a couple of federal judges have found prison gerrymandering to be unconstitutional, again, violating this principle of one person, one vote. So I think if judges want to look for opinions, they have them. But
it's who's going to bring up these opinions to examine in the first place.
Exactly, which goes to the idea of, you know, the people in power are the least likely people to want to make any kind of change, right?
Right. You mentioned in the story, it's about closing this dividing gap between the have and the have-nots. And you have the perspective of Cheryl and Leonard. What do you want people's biggest takeaway to be from this? You do explore the perspectives of the elected parties, but also it's, of course, about the people directly affected that aren't being counted as residents in the cities where they live, not the prisons where they're staying.
I think one takeaway for me that I hope can come out of this story, as I was reporting it, a lot of people would hear about this issue and they'd say, so this is about money, right? Oh, so the money must get really moved around, right? This is all about dollars. And yes, if you have more representation, that begets pork, right? But when you say, no, this is actually about political power, not as sexy of a topic, but so profound in shaping, you know, every day of our life and how we exist in the world. And so I hope that it gets people to maybe think about what their political power is, and what it means when you have someone out there looking out for your interests and who doesn't have that, and how change is ever going to happen democratically, right, when we don't kind of level that out.
Right, because we're founded on the system of one person, one vote. We see America as this great canvas of democracy, but you also attest to other examples throughout history, you know, whether it was before Civil War where they wanted slaves counted as a population to get more representation. It has ties to policies being implemented in the 70s through the 90s with war on drugs, a mandatory minimum sentence. And I suppose one thing is that this story could hopefully help people realize, do I take this for granted?
Yeah, because here we know, right, that there is a consensus around criminal justice reform now, a bipartisan consensus. And like a lot of issues, if we as a people are reaching this consensus, what is the slowdown when it comes to the people that are actually in the statehouse making policy decisions? And when you look at, you know, how is each vote being weighed, that might open up some big questions about, well, how is change ever going to happen?
Well, Natasha Haverty, job well done on this first segment, and I look forward to your future work. Thanks for coming in to talk about it.
Thank you, Audrey. Thanks a lot.
Natasha Haverty is an independent journalist whose work on prison gerrymandering in Wisconsin was featured in the reveal episode called Don't Count on the Census. She spoke with Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski, and you can find a link to listen to the full episode at WUWM.com.